3. Philip Brickell, a 43-year-old employee of the London Underground, was inside the cavernous main hall of the King's Cross subway station on a November evening in 1987 when a commuter stopped him as he was collecting tickets and said there was a burning tissue at the bottom of a nearby escalator. King's Cross was one of the largest, grandest, and most heavily trafficked of London's subway stops, a labyrinth of deep escalators, passageways, and tunnels, some of which were almost a century old. The station's escalators, in particular, were famous for their size and age. Some stretched as many as 5 stories into the ground and were built of wooden slats and rubber handrails, the same materials used to construct them decades earlier. More than 250,000 passengers passed through King's Cross every day on 6 different train lines. During evening rush hour, the station's ticketing hall was a sea of people hurrying beneath a ceiling repainted so many times that no one could recall its original hue. The burning tissue, the passenger said, was at the bottom of one of the station's longest escalators, servicing the Piccadilly line. Brickell immediately left his position, rode the escalator down to the platform, found the smoldering wad of tissue, and with a rolled-up magazine, beat out the fire. Then he returned to his post. Brickell didn't investigate further. He didn't try to figure out why the tissue was burning or if it might have flown off of a larger fire somewhere else within the station. He didn't mention the incident to another employee or call the fire department. A separate department handled fire safety, and Brickell, in keeping with the strict divisions that ruled the underground, knew better than to step on anyone's toes. Besides, even if he had investigated the possibility of a fire, he wouldn't have known what to do with any information he learned. The tightly prescribed chain of command at the underground prohibited him from contacting another department without a superior's direct authorization. And the underground's routines, handed down from employee to employee, told him that he should never, under any circumstances, refer out loud to anything inside a station as a fire, lest commuters become panicked. It wasn't how things were done. The underground was governed by a sort of theoretical rule book that no one had ever seen or read, and that didn't, in fact, exist, except in the unwritten rules that shaped every employee's life. For decades, the underground had been run by the 4 barons, the chiefs of civil, signal, electrical, and mechanical engineering. And within each of their departments, there were bosses and sub-bosses who all jealously guarded their authority. The trains ran on time because all 19,000 underground employees cooperated in a delicate system that passed passengers and trains among dozens, sometimes hundreds, of hands all day long. But that cooperation depended upon a balance of power between each of the 4 departments and all their lieutenants that, itself, relied upon thousands of habits that employees adhered to. These habits created a truce among the 4 barons and their deputies. And from that truce arose policies that told Brickell, "Looking for fires isn't your job. Don't overstep your bounds." Even at the highest level, one director was unlikely to trespass on the territory of another, an investigator would later note. Thus, the engineering director did not concern himself with whether the operating staff were properly trained in fire safety and evacuation procedures, because he considered those matters to be the province of the operations directorate. So Brickell didn't say anything about the burning tissue. In other circumstances, it might have been an unimportant detail. In this case, the tissue was a stray warning, a bit of fuel that had escaped from a larger, hidden blaze that would show how perilous even perfectly balanced truces can become if they aren't designed just right. 15 minutes after Brickell returned to his booth, Another passenger noticed a wisp of smoke as he rode up the Piccadilly escalator. He mentioned it to an underground employee. The King's Cross safety inspector, Christopher Hayes, was eventually roused to investigate. A third passenger, seeing smoke and a glow from underneath the escalator stairs, hit an emergency stop button and began shouting at passengers to exit the escalator. A policeman saw a slight smoky haze inside the escalator's long tunnel, and halfway down, flames beginning to dart above the steps. Yet the safety inspector, Hayes, didn't call the London Fire Brigade. He hadn't seen any smoke himself. And another of the underground's unwritten rules was that the fire department should never be contacted unless absolutely necessary. The policeman who had noticed the haze, however, figured he should contact headquarters. His radio didn't work underground, so he walked up a long staircase into the outdoors and called his superiors, who eventually passed word to the fire department. At 7:36 p.m., 22 minutes after Brickell was alerted to the flaming tissue, the fire brigade received a call. Small fire at King's Cross. Commuters were pushing past the policeman as he stood outside, speaking on his radio. They were rushing into the station, down into the tunnels, focused on getting home for dinner. Within minutes, many of them would be dead. At 7:36 p.m., an underground worker roped off entry to the Piccadilly escalator, and another started diverting people to a different stairway. New trains were arriving every few minutes. The platforms where passengers exited subway cars were crowded. A bottleneck started building at the bottom of an open staircase. Hayes, the safety inspector, went into a passageway that led to the Piccadilly escalator's machine room. In the dark, there was a set of controls for a sprinkler system specifically designed to fight fires on escalators. It had been installed years earlier, after a fire in another station had led to a series of dire reports about the risks of a sudden blaze. More than 24 studies and reprimands had said that the underground was unprepared for fires, and that staff needed to be trained in how to use sprinklers and fire extinguishers, which were positioned on every train platform. 2 years earlier, the deputy assistant chief of the London Fire Brigade had written to the operations director for railways, complaining about subway workers' safety habits. "I am gravely concerned," the letter read. "I cannot urge too strongly that clear instructions be given that on any suspicion of fire, the fire brigade be called without delay. This could save lives."